Pacifica Network. This is Democracy Now!, broadcasting from Washington, D.C.
More than 7,000 journalists are coming here to Washington, D.C. in the largest convention of journalists in American history.
This historic gathering, Unity 2004, is sponsored by the four major journalists of color organization: National Association of Hispanic Journalists, National Association of Black Journalists, the Asian American Journalists Association, and the Native American Journalists Association.
Amy, how many Native American journalists can you name on television, in print, or on radio?
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Three British men who served time in Guantanamo Bay are charging they were the victims of systematic abuse, were interrogated at gunpoint, and photographed naked in prison. One of their attorneys said, quote, "The account they have given from start to finish of their time in detention is an account of systematic brutality, systematic, pervasive attempts to obtain confessions, interrogation in ways banned by the international community." The U.S. military has denied any abuse occurred on Guantanamo. The men are releasing a 115-page report of their experience today. Meanwhile, in other prison abuse news, the attorney for Private Lindy England has said she was acting under orders from superiors when she abused Iraqi prisoners at Abu Ghraib. England appeared in photographs pointing at prisoners' genitals and holding a naked Iraqi detainee on a leash. Her attorney, Richard Hernandez, told the Los Angeles Times that the government is holding a few rank-and-file soldiers accountable for a, quote, systematic problem in Iraq. He said it was, quote, far from the truth that interrogators and senior officers were not aware of what was happening at Abu Ghraib. The 21-year-old England faces 19 charges of mistreatment and neglect of duty. If convicted, she could receive a maximum punishment of 38 years in prison. Also during the hearing at Fort Bragg, military officials revealed the Iraqi prisoners abused by U.S. soldiers at Abu Ghraib prison held no intelligence value. Richard Hernandez also said he would like to see Vice President Dick Cheney, as well as Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, on the witness stand. Yesterday, Homeland Security Treasury Secretary, yesterday, Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge denied politics played any role in the recent raising of terror threat level. Ridge said, quote, "We don't do politics in the Department of Homeland Security." Questions were raised about the timing of the alert after it was revealed that most of the al-Qaeda intelligence was based on surveillance carried out before the September 11th attacks. Yesterday, unnamed officials told the New York Times the decision was made in part on new intelligence that pointed to a possible attack by al-Qaeda in August or September. Agence France-Presse is reporting the U.S. has spent just under $550 million on Iraqi reconstruction since an $18.4 billion package was approved last year. The report is based on documents from the Governmental Agency Project and Contracting Office. The documents show most of the money has not been spent on reconstruction, but rather on law enforcement and security. A delegation of Iraqi civic and community leaders who are on a State Department-sponsored trip to the United States were barred from entering Memphis City Hall because the city council chairman claimed they were a security risk. The city council chair warned he would evacuate the building and bring in the bomb squads if the Iraqi delegation stepped foot in City Hall. The Iraqis were in Memphis to learn about the civil rights struggle in the South. Voters in Missouri approved an amendment of the state constitution yesterday banning same-sex marriage. Missouri is the first state to vote on the issue since the Massachusetts Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage earlier this year. 9 other states will vote on same-sex marriage bans this fall. 3 states, which have initiatives pending for other states, Alaska, Hawaii, Nebraska, and Nevada, already passed constitutional amendments banning gay marriage before the Massachusetts ruling. In campaign news, the Democratic nominee for president, John Kerry, is expected to release a list of 200 corporate executives who've endorsed his campaign. The list includes many CEOs who backed President Bush 4 years ago, including former Chrysler chief Lee Iacocca. The right-wing book publisher Regnery is preparing to release a new book titled Unfit for Command, that attempts to discredit John Kerry's entire military service. The book claims Kerry received 2 of his 3 Purple Hearts based on injuries from self-inflicted wounds, not enemy fire. The book also claims he fabricated war reports and once burned down an abandoned Vietnamese village. The book is co-written by John O'Neill, a veteran who served with Kerry in Vietnam and has been very critical of his candidacy. Halliburton agreed yesterday to pay a $7.5 million penalty to settle an investigation into charges that the company misled investors by failing to disclose a change in how it accounted for cost overruns on large construction projects. The Securities and Exchange Commission said the problem occurred in 1998 when Vice President Dick Cheney was CEO of Halliburton. Tens of thousands of people marched today in Khartoum, the capital of Sudan, protesting any foreign intervention in the Darfur region. Some participants said they would be willing to fight and die if foreign troops came to Darfur. A UN Security Council resolution last Friday gave the government a month to rein in the government-backed militias. The UN has called the refugee crisis in western Sudan the worst humanitarian crisis disaster in the world today. The American Library Association is reporting the Justice Department wants libraries to remove and destroy 5 public documents published by the government because the Bush administration has deemed the documents to be no longer, quote, appropriate for external use. 2 of the documents are texts of federal statutes. The topics addressed in the documents include information on how citizens can retrieve items that may have been confiscated by the government during an investigation. And finally, 40 years ago today, the bodies of civil rights organizers Andrew Goodman, Michael Schwerner, and James Chaney were found buried in a dam near Philadelphia, Mississippi. The 3 young men were in Mississippi as part of the 1964 Freedom Summer Project, which focused on desegregation and voter registration campaigns throughout Mississippi. The 3 were on their way to investigate a church burning when they disappeared on June 21, 1964. Members of the Ku Klux Klan were suspected of the murder, but no one was ever prosecuted in the case. Last month, James Chaney's brother called on the Justice Department to reopen the murder investigation.
Twisted in this backwards system where it seems that the end justifies the means. Does the American dream mean material things when conquests and crusades, creation of colonies, and human slavery is still a current issue? Diamond mines, clothing lines, cocoa, and tennis shoes. No noise heard on the news for that, but every station all day, they bomb in Iraq. All out attack, the whole world react. Hit the streets to stop their military acts. No, killing the children, a bombing a building, a pillaging of villages, of religious civilians by the millions. Millions spent every day, the USA forcing their futures decay. Instead of educating the youth, they're making them troops to spill blood for the thugs who took office by coup.
A ver, lo que tú me cuentas es sospechoso. A ver, me parece que eres un mentiroso. A ver, lo que tú me cuentas es sospechoso. A ver, mentiroso.
escucha bien, paisano, mi gran humilde hermano, que mientras siembras tu semilla te la venda el mero diablo. Hay que tirar primero una bola de plomo al mono que decora mi dinero, al que compró mi tierra con la sangre del obrero, sin su sombrero, quemándose la frente con el gancho del mandón. Pinche huevón, dale tu sufrir pa' que sepa lo que arde el interior. La libertad la tienes en paréntesis de fierro, a menos que te pares alto contra el mal y miedo. Te venderá el veneno que es un libro de la historia, realizado al otro lado de justicia y verdad. A ver lo que te cuenta esta vez. ¿Será verdad o no será verdad? Mal hablado, fijador, cabrón y mentiroso. Usas mi voluntad como la voz del vulgo loco.
A ver, lo que tú me cuentas es sospechoso.
Dirás que son mentiras, sin embargo es verdadero. Que estando a solas, te juntas con un montón de bueyes, pasando horas, haciendo y deshaciendo leyes, todo a beneficio de intereses materiales, ignorando el sacrificio de elementos esenciales a la vida.
Mentorosa by Omaya here on Democracy Now! The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Amy, good to see you again. I've been missing in action for a few weeks, and had to miss the Democratic Convention, but I was busy doing the final arrangements for this convention that's occurring here, our own convention of journalists. And as I said earlier, we have 7,000 people, more than 7,000, coming to here at the D.C. Convention Center for the rest of the week to discuss a lot of very pressing issues of concern to journalists of color, as well as to the general media industry.
Well, Juan, this is truly astounding. We're here in Washington, D.C. for the next 3 days, broadcasting from the Unity 2004 convention. The fact that this is the largest gathering ever of journalists, and it's sponsored by the four major journalist organizations. We're going to spend the hour in a conversation with the presidents of all the organizations, National Association of Black Journalists, National Association of Hispanic Journalists, which you are the outgoing president of.
Got four more days of my term.
as well as the Asian American Journalists Association, Native American Journalists Association. We, a few weeks ago, played a major address you gave around the issue of diversity in journalism as well as media concentration. We're joined in this segment of our program by Mei Cheng, president of the Asian American Journalists Association, and Herbert Lowe, president of the National Association of Black Journalists. Interesting, three of the five presidents are from Newsday.
Yes.
Yes, that's correct.
So, Herb, be careful what you say.
And Juan's our competitor.
So at least I know there won't be any whispering between.
No.
You won't be sharing
no.
secrets here.
I don't know.
Juan, lay out the purpose of this conference and what it took to put this convention on.
Well, all of the associations have had conventions now for more than 20 years, I think.
We're celebrating the 30th anniversary.
Yes, certainly. Yeah, NABJ is the oldest of the national groups. So 30
years. Anniversary.
Next year in Atlanta.
And back in the late 80s, we began a process, some of us in the different associations, to at least begin getting the boards of the different groups to meet. And out of that developed the idea, well, we all have annual conventions anyway. Many of the issues of each of the groups are very similar. Why don't we attempt to have a joint convention? And that happened for the first time in Atlanta in 1994. And it took a lot of, took years of effort to put it together. And then finally, that was repeated again in Seattle in 1999, where there were, I think, a little over about 6,000 people.
Yeah, that
attended.
Was an amazing convention.
Right. And so this is actually the third such effort. And the point that we've been trying to make, even though journalists of color are putting it together, because all of the news executives and many other journalists come, either as speakers or whatever, we end up having really the largest convention of journalists. For instance, the Gannett newspaper chain is sending all the editors of every one of their 100 newspapers in the United States and England to attend the Unity Convention. And I know everyone from like Dick Parsons of Time Warner and Arthur Sulzberger of the New York Times. A lot of the top executives come. The most important thing are the issues that are discussed in the panels and workshops and in the major sessions and the training that goes on. There's a lot of professional development. Like today, all day, there's professional development training where hundreds of journalists are, honing their skills.
And President Bush, John Kerry, and General Colin Powell will be addressing the Unity Convention.
Yes, at different times. So over the next week, each one of them will be addressing.
Well, there has been a major issue that's just come up, speaking of Bush. Read it in the headlines yesterday on the campaign trail. The Bush reelection campaign came under criticism after the campaign insisted on knowing the race of a photographer from the Arizona Daily Star before she was allowed to photograph the event, which was featuring Dick Cheney. The paper refused to tell the campaign. A spokesperson for the campaign defended the request as an appropriate security measure, but the managing editor of the Arizona Daily Star, Terry Haight, said, "One has to wonder what they were going to do with that information. Because she has Indian ancestry, were they going to deny her access? I don't know." Mei Cheng, you're president of the Asian American Journalists Association.
We have been speaking out about that incident. We think it smacks of racism. It's nothing short of racial profiling. They could have simply just asked for a social security number and date of birth and done a security check on just based on that information. They did not have to go and ask what her race was. I guess they looked at her name and thought it was suspicious, whatever that is. And we just can't have government acting like that.
And so what is the Asian American Journalists Association demanding?
Well, we are trying to bring attention to this issue. We're trying to be as vocal about it as we can so that we hope that was the first and last incident of something like this. We have a lot in our membership. We have a lot of South Asian journalists. We have East Asian journalists. We have South Asian journalists. We have Southeast Asian journalists. We have Pacific Islanders. And we have journalists from the Middle East. And we would hate to see this happen again to another one of our journalists.
How large is the Asian American Journalists Association?
It's now 2,200 members.
Hmm. Herb Boyd.
Yeah. I just say a couple of things. One, we are journalism organizations. And this is bad for journalism. It's bad for the First Amendment. The issue is we want to be able to present the best case to our communities what is happening, what our government leaders are doing. And if they care about race, if the Secret Service White House cares about race, they should be caring about that far too few of our members get to cover the president, get to cover the Department of State. We're announcing something later today regarding the Capitol Press Corps and the lack of diversity. So as journalist organizations, we believe that it is not necessary. If you need to do, we understand that there's need for protection for our leaders. We understand, but we want to do no more, no less than what our other colleagues are doing. So if you're not asking for anybody else's race, then don't ask for ours either. What you do, what it isn't just about that it's Asians. It's the same thing that could happen to us, him, or you, or a white journalist, any white journalist. So it's not acceptable because it's bad for journalism. Second, I would just want to reemphasize that when the president or the secretary or the senator are running around the country talking to press all the time, they should be able to look out and see that workplace diversity is not happening in the media, and they should speak out about that as well.
Herb, I wanted to raise, because, AAJA has about 2,000 members. The National Association of Hispanic Journalists has a little over 2,000 members. But the largest organization in the alliance is NABJ, the Black Journalists, with 4,600 members now, right? Yeah. It'd be interesting for those people who don't know to talk a little bit about the pioneering history of NABJ in terms of what it's been able, the impact it's had on the industry.
Well, in 1975, 44 black men and women got together and actually put their name on a list. There were about 100 people in the room here in Washington, D.C., and decided that they needed an advocacy group for journalists of color, for black journalists at the time. That was still the first generation, your generation, of journalists who had come in terms of the integration and the Kerner Report in '68, and was deciding that The same, unfortunately, some of the same issues we're facing today, they were facing then, but so far too few or not an association. And so right away they were able to make it clear that that we want to have access, equal access to opportunities, the same kinds of beats and editorships that all of us agreed that we wanted to go for when we came out of college. And I think that if there's any legacy that we could have, or any guidance or leadership that we could have by based on our size and numbers, to me, Juan knows I haven't really been trumpeting our 43% increase in membership this past year. But I think it's all about just being able to make sure that we're a year-round organization fighting for black journalists, fighting for all journalists of color, fighting for better journalism. And so we, the fact that Juan's my hero, he's been able to do great things with the Parity Project. She's got the Journalism J Camp that we, you know, I'm looking for things to steal from them. Okay, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. To me, it's not a competition. It's simply if they have a great idea, we want to do so. And if we can help in any way, we want to be able to do so.
I mean, it's great to have these partners because it really amplifies our voice, you know, so it's not just 2,200 members of AAJ speaking out about this incident with the photographer. You know, it's an alliance of organizations speaking out. And you know, for AAJ, we still face a lot of stereotypical coverage this year. We just spoke out about a Details magazine article that was supposed to be a parody comparing gays to Asians, and it just wasn't funny at all. And in their next issue, they ran a long apology. But it's sad that we still have to do something like that in this day and age.
Yeah, I also think one of the important things, as May is saying, about the ability to have all the organizations speak with one voice is that, you know, we've had a problem in terms of the whole issue of integration of the nation's press corps, not just in the mainstream or corporate media. We've had it in the progressive or left media in the country, whether you go to The Nation or Mother Jones or any of the other major outlets, there's a problem in terms of who is producing the news and how they're reporting it. You know, there's a lot of young people now, they call this identity politics. And they think that it is, it's passé, you know, but they don't understand that there's been a long battle in American history. Native Americans, the first Native American newspaper in the United States was in the 1820s, the Cherokee Phoenix, founded in Georgia. The Freedom's Journal, 1827, the first African American newspaper. The Golden Hills News in San Francisco in 1854, the first Asian American newspaper. There's a long history of journalism by people of color who were excluded and marginalized by the existing white media. And whether it's in the mainstream or corporate media or in the progressive or left media, the issue has still not been fully addressed. Diversity of voices means giving arenas for expression for all peoples in the United States. What something like this does is it forces everyone to really recognize the need in American journalism. And the other thing is, people keep forgetting. They don't look at the demographics. People of color now represent 30% of the population of the United States. By 2050, white people in the United States will be a minority. People of color will be the majority of the United States. The problem is that ownership, and this is why one of the things I think is very important that all of us in Unity was one of the plaintiffs in the Prometheus Radio Project lawsuit that was recently the Court of Appeals in Philadelphia ruled on.
Juan, let's talk about that issue of both diversity and media monopoly when we come back from our break. We're at Unity 2004. The convention is kicking off today. Really, last night there was a big town meeting. We're going to be speaking with the president of the American Association of Native American Journalists, specifically the organization called the National Association of the Native American Journalists Association, as well as the president of Unity 2004. We're speaking with now May Cheng, who's with the Asian American Journalists Association. She's president, and Herbert Lowe, president of the National Association of Black Journalists. We'll be back in a minute.
This is the time that we all should live as one, brothers. This is the time that
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez. We're broadcasting from Washington, D.C., from the largest gathering of North American journalists in U.S. history, sponsored by the four leading journalists of color organizations: the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, National Association of Black Journalists, Native American Journalists Association, and Asian American Journalists Association. We are now joined by the president of the Native American Journalists Association, Patty Talahongva, as well as the president of Unity, which is the major umbrella organization of the four journalist organizations I just named. Ernest Sotomayor is president of Unity. And, of course, Juan is president of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. Juan, you're talking about media monopoly and diversity.
Right. Well, the second we just concluded, I was mentioning that Unity was listed. One of the impacts that Unity has been able to have as an alliance is that we became one of the plaintiffs in this Prometheus Radio Project lawsuit that was recently decided by the U.S. Court of Appeals that was really remanded the FCC ownership changes. And all of our associations began to raise questions about the process that the FCC was using, this closed, this really not a transparent, open process, and we sought to try to begin to get the FCC to at least get more public input and have a more deliberate process about such sweeping changes. And we also joined in the Prometheus Radio Project suit, which was decided, and now the whole thing is held up. And really, it's going to have to wait till after the election. Who knows if Michael Pyle will still be the chair of the FCC after the election. And
His father is going to be speaking at Unity.
Yes. Secretary Powell will be speaking on Thursday afternoon at Unity. But I think the key thing is that through having this alliance, we have a lot more voice and force within the news industry. You know, it's been my viewpoint that right now the journalists of color are really the main hope for reform of the news industry from within, because the white journalists, even those who are dissatisfied with their situation, with the kind of coverage that they're forced to present, are not as organized as we are. They're not as willing to stand up. I don't know how Ernie feels about it, but in the newsrooms, usually the people who are most willing to stand up to an editor or a manager about things that are wrong are the journalists of color, because they're used to being on the short end of the stick. They're used to being misrepresented in the news. So when they see it happening, they're the first to speak out. Not all of them, but quite a few.
Ernest Sotomayor.
One of the things that we do as an organization is serve as advocates. And to a lot of people in our business, that's a dirty word. It's something that they shy away from. And what we have done through our organizations is as Juan has said, we've stood up, we've said, this is wrong. That scares a lot of people, because they teach you in journalism school when you're starting out, you've got to be fair, you've got to be balanced, you've got to be impartial. We're human beings, we have emotions, we've got thoughts, and we take positions. And when you're doing your story, you want to be fair, you want to be balanced, you want to be impartial. But you also need to understand that we have an obligation as journalists to make our profession as good as it can be, make our coverage as good as we can be. We have organizations like the Society of Professional Journalists, which have been around a long time, and they advocate for good sunshine laws, freedom of information laws. The courts close a hearing, they'll go to court to get it opened up. You know, the New York Times fought the presidency and the institution of the United States government on the Pentagon Papers. This is advocacy. It's meant to make journalism better. It's meant to get our society open and make it transparent. What we're doing is advocating for good journalism, but on another front here. So when we say we're advocates, we're not going to shy away from that. We're not going to hide behind some label that says we're not advocates, but we're just kind of nudging here. We're advocates, and we're proud of it. That's going to make journalism better, and we think that's everyone's obligation in this profession.
You're releasing a major report today, Unity 2004.
Yes, Diversity in the Washington Press Corps.
And can you lay out some of your findings?
Well, generally, we've known for a long time, anecdotally, we've been able to say that diversity in the press corps in Washington, and not just here, but throughout the nation and in bureaus in state capitals all over the nation, really is abysmally low. Diversity is very important to us. But what the study found was that we only had about 10.5% people of color among the newspaper bureau reporters and journalists in Washington, D.C. Overall, in the newspaper industry, we have about 12.5%. That's been climbing very, very slowly since the first surveys were taken in 1978. As Juan mentioned, we make up a third of the population, people of color in this country. Now, you could say that's a horrendous disparity when you consider that we've only got about 10% of the people covering Washington, and we have a third of the population, and that's their audience. And we have to think about that in that context. They're reporting on our national government, national, international affairs, and reporting out to a population that's much, much more diverse. And how you can really present the views of that population to this kind of lack of diversity is really not acceptable.
Patty Talahangwa, you are president of the Native American Journalists Association, and you're based in New Mexico. Can you talk about the major issues your organization has taken on, Native American journalists?
Well, our fight is just like trying to hold up this big boulder, you know, from crushing over us, because our voice as Native people in general is not heard. I mean, at the Democratic National Convention, when Obama was talking about all the people of color, he left out Native Americans. And it just boggles my mind that we're always forgotten. And so when it comes to reporting stories on our people, and yet, you know, we have this huge impact in our country here because of the treaties with the U.S. government, which makes our people sovereign nations. There's just all this room for misinformation out there, and we see it all the time. We see it out there in stories. One of the biggest stories that's not being covered right now is the individual Indian trust fund account, individual Indian monies trust fund account. That's bigger than Enron. It's bigger than, you know, any of these Fortune 500 whatever, you know, problems that we're having now in the financial world. And yet, you know, where are we seeing this on a daily basis? That should be headline news every day.
Explain.
Why? Because this is the Interior Department, and under President Clinton, former Interior Secretary Bruce Babbitt was held in contempt of court. Under President Bush, Secretary Gail Norton has been held in contempt of court, okay? Now, what has happened is this trust fund mismanagement case affects Native people all across the country. These are individual people who had land holdings, and they leased these lands out. But the BIA, under the Interior Department,
Bureau of Indian Affairs,
which Native people always say, watch out, because it's going to be the Bureau of Iraqi Affairs pretty soon. Now, they were ones responsible because they felt back then, you know, 200 whatever years ago, that Native people weren't competent to handle their own lease accounts. So, oh, we'll take care of you. We'll hold the lease in trust for you, and we'll pay you every year what is rightfully due yours for the leases on these lands. They didn't do that. They didn't keep the accounting. And what do we have today? Well, the Native plaintiffs, led by Eloise Cobell, she said that it's up in the billions of dollars. And will this problem ever be resolved? Will we ever see any kind of end to this? It's been going on. People have been robbed of money that's rightfully theirs for lease lands. And we don't see that in the news. And this, it affects every American. Our government has taken that money and spent it. Where? Who knows? And how are they ever going to pay that back? We're talking billions of dollars. That's a huge issue that Native people are saying. It affects a lot of our families all across the country, and yet we never see that on the air.
How large is the Native American Journalists Association?
We have, our numbers increased in this union tier, and we have close to 500 members now. And a lot of them are young people, young journalists starting their careers. And so hopefully we can continue to increase those numbers and help also our journalists who are leaving, trying to get them to come back or stay. And I think they leave because they're not encouraged to go into management or get promoted in any sense. I was never encouraged to go into management, ever, at any of my stations. And, in fact, positions came open and were filled before I even knew that they were open, and went to them after the fact and said, hey, what about me? That happened on air, that happened as in TV, and also as an executive producer for a morning show. Nothing. And I, at the time, was in Arizona, and they have 20, in Arizona, there are 21 tribes, 22 tribes with land bases in Arizona. And on the TV news in Arizona now, there's only one Native person on the air. Behind the scenes, maybe one or two. And that's it. That's pathetic. That's Arizona.
Patty, one of the things that we've noticed within the Latino community and the African American community, as the growth of media concentration has developed, the ownership question of media outlets by African Americans and Latinos has decreased dramatically. What's been happening? Because the Native Americans, at least when there is a tribal radio station, or there's press within some of the reservations, but then what has been happening on the impact of media concentration on Native American press?
I think it has a real negative impact because, again, you know, that's one more local voice that you're not hearing. And I am proud to say that, you know, I'm Hopi from Northern Arizona, and we have a radio station out there, but it's not owned by the tribe. A nonprofit organization called the Hopi Foundation secured the license for that station, and they broadcast now. And it's really, really wonderful because they have a lot of programs in Hopi, in the language itself, and they do a lot of their own kinds of programming. But when you're talking about outside the reservation or nearby the reservation, it is a problem. We don't have our voices on there. And yet, again, we go back to all the news that we're making, how it impacts not just Native people as sovereign nations, but all the people around you. You know, we have this government-to-government relationship with the U.S. government, and yet we have to abide by certain state laws as well. Sovereignty is an issue that a lot of journalists just don't understand, don't get it. And we're constantly out there trying to educate them. And that's part of the problem, too. This education should be taught in our schools. How much are you taught about Native American history? Native American government is not required in our school system right now. Why not? You know, now we're raising whole generations of congressmen, you know, lawmakers who are ignorant, utterly ignorant of Indian law, and also journalists. They don't know. What does the sovereignty mean? What exactly does that mean? Why can't I go onto a reservation and take all the pictures I want? Why is my camera being confiscated or I'm being told to leave? You know, you're going into a different country and you need to think of it like that and respect the laws of the land.
What about, Juan, the Parity Project, which is something you've pioneered? And then I want to talk about what kind of access journalists of color have.
Well, in the Parity Project, we've been trying to develop what we call a holistic approach to reforming media companies in their coverage as well as in their hiring practices. And we now have it operating in 7 cities across the country. We just started a year ago, and we already have another 11 companies that are in the pipeline that have asked and want to be part of the Parity Project. And so we're now up to 17 separate media outlets around the country. We're going to be doing the Tampa Tribune and a Tampa television station in February. We're doing 3 Pulitzer papers in California, the Napa Valley Register, the Hanford Sentinel, and the Santa Maria Times very soon. And at this convention, we're going to announce some major national companies that want to get into the Parity Project. But what we try to do in the Parity Project is we hold town hall meetings. We get community leaders to confront the editors, all the editors of a paper or the managers about what kind of coverage, how are they covering the Latino community, what does the community like about it, what doesn't it like about it. So we mobilize the community to get involved, and we convince the companies that they're going to have to be responsive to their communities. And then we do training of the staffs, of the white staff and the black staff, to become more aware and knowledgeable about the Latino community. So we, in essence, try to change the culture of the newsroom. See, because the one thing people don't understand about the United States, unlike many other countries, developed largely, because it's such a huge country, it developed largely a locally based media system. There is very little national press in the United States. New York Times is a New York paper that has some national circulation. It's not a national paper. USA Today is the only national paper. Most other countries, you have national papers that everyone reads around the country. So you have 1,400 daily newspapers in the United States, and each of them in their local communities is very influential. You have 1,200 television stations, local television stations. There's a network, yes, but it's a local station. So it's a locally based media system. So what we've tried to do is if we're going to change the American media, you have to change it company by company, newsroom by newsroom. You can't do it from the top, from a fiat, from a corporate director in Washington or someplace else. You have to re-educate the reporters in every single newsroom. So that's what we're trying to do. Go to the base of the media system and re-educate the reporters and get the community involved in holding that media company accountable for its coverage.
That's something I've always encouraged, too, excuse me, Arnie, about getting Native people involved with their local TV stations or going to their editorial boards of the local papers, because they, I don't think they realize that they can call these meetings and get them and tell them. And I've always said, too, when their license comes up for renewal, you write, you put those letters in the file, and you tell them, when was the last time we had a decent story on Native Americans or an issue or whatever else. So
we're going to break for stations to identify themselves. Erna Sotomayor, hold that thought. We're talking also with Patty Talahongva, who is the president of the Native American Journalists Association. Erna Sotomayor, president of the umbrella organization of the four leading journalists of color organization that are holding this historic gathering in Washington, which is why we're in the nation's capital this week. It's taking place at the Washington Convention Center. Over 7,000 journalists have gathered to talk about issues of diversity, to talk about international, national, and local issues. Stay with us.
This is the system. But still, the small man believes in the system. So he says to the big man, what can I sing for you? What can I buy from you? Who can I fight for you? Yeah. What can I carry for you, big man? I'll carry your gun.
Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We're here in Washington, D.C. at the Unity 2004 convention. It's taking place through this week. It is the largest gathering of North American journalists in history. More than 7,500 journalists sponsored by the four leading journalists of color organization. Juan's president of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, National Association of Black Journalists, the largest of the Journalists of Color organization, Asian American Journalists Association, as well as the Native American Journalists Association. Our guests in the studio, Patty Talahongva, also Erna Sotomayor, who's president of the Umbrella Unity 2004. Ernest, you wanted to get a word in.
I wanted to follow on a point that Juan made about the Parity Project that he didn't really fill in, and that is that in some of the papers where, or at least a couple of the papers where we've had the Parity Project running now, what we actually found was that it didn't increase only the Latino population in the newsroom, but it actually led to more hiring of people from the other ethnic groups. And in fact, in one paper, I believe there were more people from journalists from the other organizations, other races, than there were from Latinos. That's a good thing for everybody.
For example, the Rocky Mountain News in Denver just hired their first Native American journalist. And if anybody knows the history of the Denver Post and the Rocky Mountain News in terms of how it totally was racist in its coverage of Native Americans in Colorado, this is like the Native American community has still not forgotten how the Rocky covered some major massacre, Sand Creek Massacre, back in the late 1800s. So the fact that a Native American journalist is now reporting at the Rockies, it's like a major major event.
And what kind of environment is that person going into with that kind of culture that's so embedded in that newsroom? And that's part of the concern that we have in putting out the young journalists or even a seasoned journalist to go into a newsroom that's basically hostile towards you. You know, the idea of, well, you just got the job because you're a person of color. You know, people say that, and in broadcasting, oh, you're going to get a job right away because, you know, you're a minority. Oh, really? Is that why we have on our network news all people of color anchoring? You know, we're taking over all these jobs. It's not happening, and our people are leaving.
That gets to the point exactly that Juan's raising about this holistic approach. A lot of companies 20 years ago when the ASNE, the American Society of Newspaper Editors, really began pushing this idea of having parity in the population in the workforce with the population of the United States, began hiring. But it's not enough to bring the journalist into the company if you're going to have a hostile environment. You need to have people who understand what it takes to keep them, not just them, but everybody in the staff, good management practices that have good reviews and mentoring and nurturing of those people and training so that they understand that down the road they're going to have an opportunity to do their craft better and they're going to have advancement opportunities. Survey after survey after survey in the newspaper industry has shown that people are leaving. People of color are leaving for almost all the same reasons. They don't see opportunities for advancement. They don't see good training opportunities, so they're going to stagnate in their careers while they see people who are not of color getting those opportunities. They're not coming to Washington because they're not qualified. While they see people who don't have any more experience than they do coming to Washington, and they're whites. That disparity is something that they've got to erase. So it's not enough to just bring them in. You've got to create an environment that welcomes them and gives them value, assigns them value based on their ethnicity. And so until you correct that, we can bring all the people into the pipeline, put them in these newspapers and broadcast newsrooms, but it's not going to solve the problem if they're coming out the other end of the sausage at the same rate.
Yeah, because we're at Unity, we're also training young people. Not only this people who are doing their first job, but we have 160 college students and 200 high school students.
Actually, we have 260 260 high school students.
And the college students are actually producing a daily newspaper. They're producing a daily TV show. They're producing a daily online news reporting of the convention and a radio show. So we have four separate projects where the college students are actually being trained during the convention, putting out these products, and in essence, also getting a chance to meet other journalists that they're able to then, you know, get mentored by and so forth.
And the mentors are fabulous. We have people from our own associations coming in to mentor. And I'm a veteran of Unity 94 and the TV project. And, you know, some of the people in those newsrooms who are mentoring, they volunteered their time. And a lot of them have taken time off from work, vacation time, because their employers won't let them go or won't pay for their way to come to a convention to help train. And that speaks to a whole other issue of, okay, you say you want diversity, you say you want to do this. You know, I tried to get, one of probably five Native American photographers in the country to come and help out in this project. His news director is my former news director. He never returned my calls. And, you know, what do we do? You know,
what? And what about the issue of scholarship?
Scholarships, we need more money for that. We definitely need more money for that. And also to reach out and even give young Native people that idea of being a journalist. Because for us, we always say it's such a natural progression of who we are as Native people, whether we're oral storytellers or whether we have some sort of written language. Hopi is not written. It's only been in the last 12 years or so that we actually have an alphabet and a dictionary, and we can now learn how to read and write in our language. But prior to that, it was all oral. But this tradition of oral history or oral storytelling now translating into pages, writing for a newspaper, broadcasting on the radio, or going on television and doing a story. So that's a natural progression of what we do as Native people.
You're the producer of Native America Calling, which is a national radio broadcast.
We're the only national radio broadcast in the country. And actually, it's real important, too, to remember that we don't recognize the borders as Native people. You know, this imaginary border between the U.S. and Canada and also the U.S. and Mexico, because our people go back and forth all the time. And they were there before before the borders were there. So when we look at our coverage area, you know, Native America Calling, yes, it's in the United States, but we also have a lot of listeners in Canada, our Aboriginal brothers and sisters. So it's the only one. It's a live one-hour talk show, and it looks at any issue, anything from a Native perspective. When Ronald Reagan died, we looked at him, his legacy, from a Native perspective. What did he do for Native people? And some tribes, he was very helpful, very good. Other tribes, almost wiped them out. And then his policies or lack of policies in South and Central America.
For people who are listening right now, people who are watching right now, Democracy Now! Broadcasting across the country on over 240 community radio stations, Pacifica stations, NPR stations, public access TV stations. Our first PBS station is, interestingly enough, on a Native American reservation in Montana, mm-hmm. and on both satellite networks, on Link TV, which is DirecTV Channel 375, and on Dish Network, Free Speech TV Channel 9415, and many rural areas. That's the way people get television. But how can they link up with these organizations, with the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, with Unity, with Native American Journalists Association?
Well, they can go to the website. Every association has its own website. They can just do a search for each of the groups and get to the actual website. Many people can join, whether they're and you don't have to be African American or Latino or Asian to join any of the groups. They all have open membership policies. You just have to be committed to the mission of the different associations.
Can people come to Unity 2004 still? Can they sign up?
Well, they can, but at this late stage, the registration fee is kind of high, but they could definitely come. They're still...
Don't discourage them. Yeah. Just come.
Yeah.
That's a very important point. One reason, a very important
Ernest
point.
Ernest said to
my raised this point. The Parity Project is intended to, as he says, be very holistic, and that means bringing the community, the people who read our newspapers and pay their 50 cents every day and watch the newscasts. They are the ones who, in a sense, can also be part of the gatekeepers. They can decide whether they want to buy that publication or not, or watch that newscast. They turn it off. Those ads aren't going to be watched. Those advertisers are going to go away. They hold a lot of power. Now, there's a process that our federal government has in licensing that allows them to come and speak. It's not exercised very much, and there are projects underway to make the population understand you've got rights, you've got the power to stand up and challenge licenses. It's only happened once where they've actually been successful in the history of the FCC. But you start making enough noise and things start happening. Squeaky wheels can really make a difference, and that's part of what this is all intended to do. We'll welcome anybody into our organizations. You don't have to be a journalist to join. You need to have the passion to make change and to stand up and make your voice heard. That's what this is really all about.
I think the other important thing is, because both John Kerry and President Bush will be speaking one Thursday morning and one Friday morning.
Kerry Thursday morning.
Yeah, Kerry
Bush
Thursday morning and
Friday
Bush
morning.
Friday morning. They're going to get questions. Because the condition that they came was that they had to answer questions from a panel of journalists. They're not just going to come to give a speech. So that they're going to get questions at this convention that they haven't gotten on the TV in any other format. Because the issues that we're going to raise are going to be quite different. I'm just thinking, I listened to John Kerry's speech. He never once mentioned in his acceptance speech the millions and millions of immigrants in the United States, or what his immigration policy was, or how it differed from George Bush's. He never mentioned the word immigrants in his acceptance speech. So I'm sure he's going to get a question about that and about other issues that you haven't heard in other press venues.
Interestingly, Barack Obama did, but he was not in prime time, and because the networks cut back on their coverage of the conventions, we didn't even hear that address. I want to thank you all for being with us. This has been a very interesting discussion. The presidents of the five major journalists of color organization. On our website will be the links to all of your websites. Juan, we are also joined in our studios here in Washington by a group, by a TV documentary group that is following you because you're being honored this week.
Well, actually, that's going to be in September, yeah, but I was named... The National Hispanic Heritage Foundation gave me a leadership award, which is going to be in September, a big ceremony at the Kennedy Center.
Well, congratulations for that. And I want to thank you all for being with us. We'll continue to be broadcasting from Unity 2004 this week. Democracy Now! Produced in Washington by Jeremy Scahill. Special thanks to Dennis Moynihan in New York, Mike Burke and Nell Geiser, John Hamilton, Anna Nagara, Elizabeth Press, Mike DeFilippo, our engineer, Uri Galed, our director. Our website is democracynow.org. Get all the links there. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!